Welcome to the Brian D. O'Leary Show. This is your home for serious content amidst an unserious world.
Brian O'Leary back with you. Brian D. O'Leary Show. Head over to briandoleary.com. Sign up for our letter. More or less daily emails that we send out to kind of compliment this podcast. Podcast compliments the emails, one way or another. Building our whole stack over here. And while you're at it, if you're not following me on Twitter or X or whatever they're calling it these days, at Brian D. O'Leary over there. Last week, a couple folks took us up on an offer to follow us and a few goodies, and I had a promotion running last week there, and sending those out here soon now that that offer ran out. We'll work on more offers like that here in the next few days or few weeks. And so there's that. I think earlier this week I talked football, college football, Coach Prime at Colorado, talked a bit of NFL and Major League Baseball. Well, maybe the pull of sports is too much. Kind of why I was talking about it today earlier, not on the podcast, of course, but elsewhere. And I don't know where I am exactly with sports. I started out doing this thing, sports podcaster, and that's what I was going to be, and that didn't work out. But sports has this pull on me my whole life, particularly baseball. Although I think I talked about it last show that I haven't really watched much baseball this year. Gone to a couple high school games and watched a couple games on television. And other than that, it's highlights or whatever. And it's not even that many. I mean, normally I was caught up with everything every day. It's part of the deal. And it doesn't happen anymore. A number of reasons, but I'm not actually that sad about it. It makes me a little angry that things that could have been done that I'd be more interested, but there's other things to do, certainly. But and the game's messed up. The game itself at the pro level in particular, and it's always been messed up at the amateur level. But the game of baseball is my favorite game, probably. Not necessarily to watch, not necessarily to play, but just overall, it's my game. It's my game. And well, that being said, there was some news, I think, that dropped yesterday in Boston regarding, I think the guy, how you pronounce his name, is Chaim Bloom. Exactly sure. Chaim. I don't even know. I've never heard the guy, his name pronounced, but whatever. I'm going to go with Chaim Bloom. He was a general manager of the Red Sox, president or whatever, the operations baseball-wise, and he got let go. And you see this online, and everybody's like, oh, he had to go, and I agree. He had to go. He was, he came in very high expectations. He'd formerly worked with the Tampa Bay organization, and I don't know if he turned that around. I don't know, because their former general manager went to the Dodgers. This guy got promoted, and then he got hired by the Red Sox. Anyway, Red Sox were coming off a 20-year heater, let's put it that way, or pretty close, 15 anyway. So win the World Series, 04, 07, 2012, 2018, 13. I can't remember. I don't have the dates right in front. Should know that as a lifelong Red Sox fan. But I don't really care that much. Although you see all the potential that Bloom was supposed to bring in Boston, and they stink. And they won a World Series with their last general manager, Dave Dombrowski, who'd been general manager several different. And I'm not exactly sure why he got cut loose, but maybe it was time. I don't know. Perhaps some disagreements with the front office or the ownership, I should say. He's part of the front. I don't know. Regardless, Bloom comes in and they stink. Red Sox stink. And some of the stuff they're saying, all right, well, he was hamstrung, he had to deal with the luxury tax and the ownership not wanting to pay people, and who knows. But he's bought in to do a job, and he stunk at it, and he got fired, or whatever the case may be. He's no longer the general manager in Boston. And I think about it, and I didn't like pretty much any of the moves from the beginning from Bloom. For the most part, granted, you're going to have one or two here or there, but you get the apologia from on the internet, particularly Twitter. It's like, oh no, you know, all these excuses. It reminds me of a few months back. I think I said something about Bloom and his essential ineptitude at the job, as I see it anyway, 3,000 miles away or whatever it might be. But we're all relatively connected here in this world of the internet, podcasting and whatnot. But I was like, man, as far as he goes, he's probably the worst general manager since Dan Duquette. And if you're not familiar with Dan Duquette, he was the general manager for the Red Sox in the 90s for the most part. He got fired, and then they brought in Theo Epstein, who won him, three World Series? At least two with Theo in charge. I think two with Theo in charge, and then basically his operation continued. And then he moved on to the Cubs and won one. No, now long. Who knows? I mean, he might come back. From what I understand, it looks doubtful that he'd come back to the Red Sox. But either way, Duquette was, he made some good moves. Certainly, he brought Pedro Martinez in. There was a few of the folks that were on the 2004 World Series championship team. They're part of his, bringing him up through the system or signing him. But my biggest gripe, and it is not keeping Roger Clemens. And then you have the apologists, the Duquette apologists are like, oh, no, he was past his prime. He's had to do steroids to prolong his career and this, that, and the other. No, that ain't true. For whatever reason, they wanted to get rid of him. And they did this thing. I was at the very last game, I believe, that Clemens was in a Red Sox uniform, or pretty close to it anyway. Toward the end of that season, I think it was the 1996 season. They put up on the Green Monster, before there were any ads like they've had over the last 20 years or so, they put up two of his jerseys, big graphics of his jerseys. Number 21, and the gray had Clemens on the back, and then the white had just the 21 that you'd see on the back of the Red Sox jerseys. And they put him up there because that season, Roger Clemens had just tied his own record that he set 10 years earlier for striking 20 guys out in a game. It's since been tied, I think. Kerry Wood and Randy Johnson come to mind. Randy Johnson didn't even... I think he pitched the 10th inning, too, or maybe he came out after the 9th, but it was a tie game. They didn't even get the win. He struck out 20 guys. That's how crazy that game was. But in 1986, home game against the Mariners, I believe it was, he struck out 20 Mariners. And then 1996, in an away game against the Tigers, he struck out 20 Tigers. And granted, both of those opposition teams weren't very good. But that was supposedly what I think Duquette coined the twilight of his career, Roger Clemens. He goes on to win two consecutive Cy Youngs in Toronto, signs as a free agent up there. And then he wins a couple World Series and as a Yankee, and then Cy Young, I think again, I don't know, again, I didn't plan on talking about it, but so I don't have it in front of me, but with the Houston Astros, and then goes back to the Yankees. And he might even be more well-known as a New York Yankee now because, at least championships followed him there. Either way, phenomenal pitcher for many years. I think his career ended 2004 or 5, I want to say, or after that, maybe longer. So, I mean, the guy played 20-some-odd years in the big leagues. You can say whatever you want about him. Tremendous work ethic, and his career wasn't over, and it was just part of the culture of what was going on in the big leagues, and you could have signed him, and they could have signed him for cheaper, and he could have had a good career, but the Red Sox wanted to move elsewhere. And then they had a couple of years of horrible teams, just terrible, until they brought in Pedro, and they started building up back then. And, so you could say, well, yeah, Pedro at that stage was better than Clemens at that stage, arguable. I mean, Pedro did have a couple of the best years for a pitcher in his entire career, but can you imagine having both guys, two frontline number one starters? I don't know. I might be getting too far into the baseball part of it, but my point being is Dan Duquette was, I disliked him as a general manager. He was terrible communicator for Red Sox fans, and he was, and I stopped really caring for a while about the Red Sox, who were my childhood favorite team, due to, family stuff. Our family's from Boston, part of it anyway, half my family. And so we're Red Sox fans, like it or not, that's who you are. And, the National League, of course, I like the Braves and the Cubs because they're on TV every day. In the National League, I knew better. But either way, this Bloom character, he's out of it in Boston. And I guess what I really wanted to, the point, sorry about the history lesson, but the point I wanted to make regarding Bloom is that it's just time to move on when you're not doing a good job. I don't care what the excuses are. Just like Duquette, they weren't winning. They had to get rid of him. And then, Duquette, it was all his work, and they won a championship after Duquette. It's like, no, the organization markedly changed when they got rid of Duquette. So the point being, I guess, if you're struggling, like the Red Sox have been lately, I mean, they're in the toughest division in baseball, granted. But, you know, it's not just the moves of the general manager. It's the whole culture surrounding the organization. It has gone from a winning culture, a winning organization, to a lot of backbiting. And this is what happened, you know, right when Terry Francona, they got rid of him as a manager. He created a winning culture in that locker room. And then the whatever happened, and they may have, the front office may have brought in guys that weren't necessarily, didn't really work out. Even though they were a good team, actually, they just missed the playoffs, and they had this whole thing about, you know, these guys are drinking beer and eating fried chicken in the locker room and whatever. And they lost a bunch of games down the stretch, and Francona got shown the door. You know, he's going to probably go down as a Hall of Fame manager, I imagine. A couple world championships under his belt, and just a really pretty good run with Cleveland, where he took the Indians to the World Series, almost won it with them. Cubs beat him out. He had a run with Philadelphia early in his career that didn't go too well, but they were a crummy team. But my point being is that it's the culture that matters. It starts from the top. And when you have a chaotic culture, you're going to have chaotic results. Not necessarily bad results. You're going to have chaotic results. You could be good, you could be bad, but nobody can pinpoint why exactly it was good. And this goes for all organizations, whether it's business, sports. I'm more familiar with sports. But you have a chaotic leadership structure, chaotic culture, you're going to get chaotic results. And I think that's you can take that to the bank. So if you're out there leading people, leading an organization, create a culture with standards, I guess, is what I'm getting at ultimately. And that's kind of what I've spent the last several years trying to develop on a number of fronts. And without getting into too much detail, but it really started out with, you know, applying for a job, and it's just developed into this kind of passion of mine of like how I would run organizations, particularly as it applies to baseball and, you know, sports in general, but baseball. And anyway, but you need a culture with standards in the building. And I guess it could go, you know, same thing. I think we could take it for granted a lot, but in our families, if there's a chaotic structure of the family, you're going to get chaotic results. And it's true, you know, about, so having standards that you can stick to. And I talked about the Boston College football team last show. And I think Coach Jeff Hafley is pretty good at a lot of things football wise. I don't know. I really don't know how good he is at having a standard that they can all live by. And that's part of the challenge of being a head football coach. And not to say that I could do it any better, for sure. I don't know football well enough. But to be a leader, we need to have standards, or a standard that everybody can look toward as being the standard of performance. As actually Coach Bill Walsh, former coach of the 49ers in Stanford, primarily known for the 49ers, but he had what was called a standard of performance. I've probably talked about it on this show before. Standard for everybody to achieve, and each individual in the organization has a standard. It's not just go and show up. No, jobs were defined from the quarterback to the offensive line coach to the public address announcer and points in between. This is how you are expected to do your job. This is the standard of performance. And a lot of people think that's too much. And it might be for a lot of organizations. But guess what? He won 3 Super Bowls as the head coach of the San Francisco 49ers in, what, not even 10 years on the job, I don't think. And then, owing to a sense of, well, I'm not sure exactly what sense, but he resigned. And he went to, he's just like, it ran its course, you know? I think he needed fresh blood, and, you know, their things wear out. And this same thing goes with his thing in Boston. Although Bloom didn't produce any results, certainly nowhere near as the results that Walsh was able to accomplish in San Francisco. So I look at that, and you know, these are the great people, right? These are the great coaches, the great managers, all this stuff. They have this sense of culture and whatnot. And, you know, they're not these chaotic type managers. It's steady. Bill Belichick in New England, he's the same way. Very similar anyway. I would say, even as much as I know about Theo Epstein, former general manager for the Red Sox and the Cubs, he had standards, and then he left at a certain amount of time. It ran its course. Who knows where he's going to pop up next, but he's got a great life, had very successful programs for two different organizations. So I don't know. We have people from all over the place that listen to this podcast. I know some of them are sports fans. Some of them follow me to see whatever I'm going to think about. They're like, oh boy, here he goes again. Well, here I go again on sports and tying it back together to, I guess, business or life in general and organizations. So I would, not that I'm saying anything earth-shattering. I deal with a lot of people every week and in group coaching and group type settings where, and I'm certainly guilty of it myself, where we can knock around ideas with each other about where we're going and what we're doing and stuff. And there's certain things like we just don't see that are right in front of us. And I think that's one of these things that having a standard that, and then constantly improving on your own standard is a really great way to think about it or kind of envision one's life and one's mission. Is to have a standard and live up to it. And within organizations in particular, keep that in mind. And there, you can always move on. If, you know, say the higher ups aren't meeting your standard, but you have to define that and probably define that to your superiors in order for that to go. But the superiors, honestly, they should have standards in place. Most of them don't. Most of them, you know, you take any run-of-the-mill baseball organization right now, or football, NFL, they got a general manager who gets guys to get on their team. They've got some system on how to evaluate them, whatever. They get a coach who's good at offense or good at defense. They run the plays, but there's no overarching idea of like, what is the culture? What it's a people thing, right? It's not only the game, the X's and O's. It's the, what do they call somebody? One of these coaching guru types say it's not the X's and O's, it's the Jimmies and Joes. It is. It's about all about people. And granted, you have to have good people in order to succeed, but I don't know. So that being said, my baseball and somewhat a little bit on football, NFL stuff being said once again, it's Friday afternoon as I record this, and the Boston College Eagles are set to take on the Florida State Seminoles. Noon Eastern, 9 Pacific in Chestnut Hill. Supposed to be windy, perhaps rainy. I'm not looking forward to the result of this game. Seminoles are top 5 in the country. We are probably close to the bottom 5. But I shall say, the game will be on national television. Not often do you see Boston College on national television, and it's an important game. I think I talked about it even last year around this time. Can't remember exactly who we played for the game, but it's called the Red Bandana Game, and it honors a former classmate of mine, Wells Crowther, who died in the 9/11 towers, the World Trade Center towers, after saving, originally I heard it was 10, but I think the latest numbers I heard is like upwards of 18 people from sure death. And he was a true hero, classmate of mine, 1999, died 24 years old as a hero. And Wells Crowther wore, he had on him at all times a bandana, like a handkerchief. So a bandana being a little bit bigger than your normal handkerchief if you carry one of those around. I do. But it was the red one, like a bandit looking thing, Old West, red one. And his dad had a blue one. Wells had the red one. And so he always carried it with him just in case he needed to wipe some sweat off his head or in this case, protect his breathing from all the rubble and dust that was coming in. And the interesting thing was that he was a volunteer firefighter also. So he had the skills to help people. And so he put this red bandana on his face, saved all these people, and nobody knew who he was. He was just this mysterious guy, man in the red bandana. Nobody saw his face. Well, you couldn't really see much of his face, but he was helping getting all these people down to safety, and ultimately he perished. But it wasn't until several years later when all these stories came out of people who actually survived the attacks and got out of the tower that Wells was in that the stories started to come together. Who's this mysterious guy, man, in the red bandana? Oh, yeah, he saved me too. So this Saturday's game, BC wears uniforms laced with red bandana that looks like red bandana, red, you know, with a gold helmet and the rest. Well, the accents and all the uniforms and all the numbers are, look like your red bandana. So whether we win or whether we lose, it gets us some exposure on the national scene as, I mean, it. I don't know anymore, but certainly back then it makes me proud to be an alumni of the institution, at least alumni of the institution I once knew. They pretty much crapped the bed during the whole COVID thing. And for that, I'm eternally bitter, but things are working themselves back into semi-normalcy, and it gives me the football team Saturdays in the fall is just something I'm stuck with for the rest of my life, probably. And I don't know if I like it or not, but I'm going to promote Boston College football, encourage all of your 4-star, 5-star sons who are football players to go to Boston College. It's a great place. Or was, anyway. I'm sure it still is. It's like a better environment for college now, I would guess, like the with all the infrastructure improvements over the last 30 years. But that being said, I watch or listen to all the games, follow them, not maybe as closely as I once did, because I like I said earlier in the program, I try to extricate myself from these sports, but I can't stop talking about it because they do mean a lot to me. And it's, you know, one of these kind of struggles I have in my life. There are certain things I need to expunge from my life. I can't do it, at least not now, or I don't have a system in place to do it. And so anyway, red bandana game this Saturday on ABC, national televised game, noon Eastern. And we'll see if I can put in the show notes some more resources for you as far as that goes. But it's a special day. It really is. And we do, they usually do that game as close to the 9/11 anniversary as possible. As we know, the 9/11 anniversary is Monday. And if you guys didn't get my email about that, you can get on my list. And if you get on my list, you can just email me, say, I didn't get that email, what it's all about. And so I didn't put it on Substack. I just put it to the normal email list, which most of you get both of the, if you're on the email list, you get stuff from wherever I send emails from, whether it's Substack or my personal account. And anyway, that you can go to briandealeary.com for that. So that being said, I just got to say, go Eagles. And, hopefully it turns out better for the Red Sox in the future, but I'm not holding my breath anytime soon. But I am concerned about the Eagles, and hopefully we make it a respectable game for a more than respectable, rather heroic memory day that we celebrate. So, with all that, have a great weekend, and like I said, once more, go Eagles.